The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin, and Judge Riley. The Honorable Denise Riley presiding. The first case is A21-1104 in the matter of the civil commitment of Thomas Stephen Allen Snook.
Thank you and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We'll follow the same rules that we do if we were in person. So each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument with 5 minutes of rebuttal for the appellant. Please state your name at the beginning of your argument because we are recording this and we want to make sure that the record is clear. We were having a couple of technical glitches earlier in the morning. So if at any time you can't hear us or we freeze, please raise your hand to let us know so that we can stop the clock. Any questions about any of that?
No.
Then Mr. Wynette, are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
You may.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Malcolm Wynette on behalf of Thomas Stephen Allen Snook. I'm appearing from Wadena, Minnesota remotely. Mr. Snook is listening in on speakerphone from Moose Lake MSOP. We come before the court requesting that the court find that the trial court made error in finding that Mr. Snook is rightfully committed as a sexually dangerous person. We don't believe that he has a disorder preventing himself from controlling his sexual impulses. Likewise, we do not feel that the court rightfully found that he is highly likely to engage in future sexual conduct. Mr. Snook certainly did have sexual deviant behavior as a juvenile. In the summer of 2000, when Mr. Snook was 11, 12 years old, he had a birthday in the summer. He himself was sexually assaulted, and he then began to sexually offend against other younger juvenile females. During that summer, there were several sexual assaults, which later came to light, and Mr. Snook then was punished for that and engaged in various sexual offender programming. He did complete the program for juveniles at Mille Lacs Academy. However, there were later some behavioral issues which were problematic. Up to when he was 19 years old, he did have the sexual offense against a 15-year-old who was not of age to consent. As a result of that, he was placed on probation with a treatment requirement, which he failed at. He failed at probation and he was terminated from treatment due to his inability to control his behavior. Now, that inability to control his behavior was never based on new sexual offenses or sexually deviant conduct. Mr. Snook would just be unable to follow rules, would lose his temper, frequent outbursts, which made it impossible for the group homes he was residing in to keep him there, and he would be revoked on his conditional release and probation and eventually sent to prison several times, both for the underlying prison sentence he had stayed and then for the conditional release period.
Well, I understand that some of the issues that authorities were concerned about was his access of pornography, including violent pornography and bestiality. Do you consider that deviant behavior?
When he was at the CORE program in Bridges in St. Cloud after his last release from prison, there were allegations he did access pornography. I'm not aware that there was bestiality involved in that. He certainly was sexting with an older lady. I think it's significant that it was an older lady and not a younger, because he was very concerned about not having anything to do with anyone younger and to make sure anyone he was involved with in any way was of the age of consent. But yes, accessing pornography itself is not necessarily deviant, although it was a clear violation of his treatment expectations and rules. He was terminated from treatment, sent back to prison on that. That being said, the CORE program was willing to reinstate Mr. Snook back into treatment when he was released, if possible.
Mr. Wynot, in your brief, page 12, you say that Mr. Snook, and this is his latest, throughout his latest incarceration and subsequent treatment, Mr. Snook demonstrated a meaningful progression towards gaining control of his sexual deviancy, his correction of past thinking errors, and his ability to gain control of behaviors that could lead to problematic situations for him. I was looking at the record, and I hope you can point me to the record that supports that statement.
There are several places where we can support that. Prior to his latest incarceration, his penultimate incarceration, when he was released from prison to the Bridges program and engaged in treatment in St. Cloud, he no longer had the frequent behavioral outbursts, which had been so problematic for him in the past. So he was able to demonstrate a control of his behavior. Now, controlling his sexual deviancy, you know, his sexual deviancy had been based around offending against prepubescent females. He's never had any offenses of that type since that summer of 2001, other than the 2008 offense against a 15-year-old when he was 19. And the times when he was released from prison and in the community, which was a minority of the time, he never had any similar sexual outbursts or offenses against any other minor females or younger females. So we do believe that he has demonstrated that he is able to control his behavior and is therefore not highly likely to sexually offend in the future, if that answers the court's question.
And I think I've fallen down on my presiding duties because I just noticed that the clock is at 14 minutes.
I see time was going quite slow, Your Honor.
I guess. And I'm not sure. Maybe our marshal can help us with that. And it's at 12:41 a.m. Oh, well. We'll try to figure out how much you're into your 15 minutes, and I'll let you know when you're approaching a minute away from it. I'm sorry for the problem.
No, that's very fine, Your Honor. And the points we have are quite clear and succinct. We just don't believe that Mr. Snook's past behavior justifies this continued commitment, that he has demonstrated a meaningful ability to control his behavior. I do understand that both examiners in this matter did find that an SDP commitment would be justified for Mr. Snook. However, we believe, Mr. Snook and myself, that he does not meet that criteria, that he has demonstrated the ability to control his behavior, and that it is unwarranted for this commitment to continue. And that's so my
But the marshal just texted me and said that she set it for 15 hours, not 15 minutes. And so you'll be at 15 minutes when it's at 14:45. You have some more minutes if you want to use them. If not, I'll ask my colleagues if they have any questions. I see Judge Johnson has unmuted himself.
Since we have a lot of time, but no, I'm kidding. Mr. Wynot, in your brief on page 12, you refer to some of the statistics showing a likelihood of recidivism of between 20% and 30%. In the state's or the commissioner's responsive brief, there's extensive discussion of other evidence in the record, some of it statistical in nature, that indicates a much greater probability. Do you have any reply to the respondent's argument in that part of the respondent's brief?
No, Ms. Keyes's points there are well taken. The reliance on statistics is a new method in these cases. It's less than 20, 30 years old. We are unsure of the long-term validity of these. They're constantly being reassessed. Now, I do understand that it's a preponderance of opinions that these statistics may actually undercount the future likelihood of reoffense. However, we do feel that any statistic less than 99% would not be highly likely to reoffend. And so whether it's 60% or 30%, we don't believe, unless it's extremely high, that the statistic itself be enough to justify the commitment. We would focus on Mr. Snook's behavior and the absence of sexual deviant behavior that would justify his argument that he does not meet the criteria for a sexually dangerous person.
On page 42 of the responsive brief, there's reference to the VRAG tool, which indicated recidivism rates of 76 and 87%. Do you have any particular reply to that part of the argument?
I would note that the VRAG tool, I believe, was used by Dr. Lovett, was not also used by Dr. Alsdorf, so I do believe that reduces some of the weight to be given to it.
Judge Larkin, do you have any questions? No.
None from me, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else, Mr. Wynott?
No, Your Honor, we would rest.
I think it's the first time that you would have had the ability to have a filibuster in the Court of Appeals at 15 hours.
I've been accused of verbosity at times, but I don't know if I can make it that long, Your Honor.
Okay. Ms. Kesey, are you ready to proceed? Unmute yourself, please.
I always forget that. Please the court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Angela Kesey, and I'm representing the respondent, Wadena County. And in this case, first of all, with respect to the first issue on the sexual personality or other mental disorders and the lack of adequate control, as you saw in the briefs, each examiner diagnosed Mr. Snook with several sexual personality or other mental disorders. And of particular note in their testimony and in the record, as with respect to the lack of adequate control of sexual impulses, are his diagnoses of other specified paraphilic disorder, which goes to the deviance of non-consent sex, and hebephilia, which is sex with teens, young teens, deviant pattern, that Dr. Alsdorf based his on the deviant pattern of arousal that led to the injury of others, and then his antisocial personality disorder. But his other mental impairments also contribute to his lack of control to the extent that some of them, Dr. Alsdorf, I think both doctors testified, go to his issues with impulsivity as far as of his lack of control of sexual impulses. And while he hasn't reoffended since 2008, he has been incarcerated for much of that time and has not had access to the young victims. He's also never been out, I don't think, for more than about a year in that time. And to the extent that he has been in the community since then, he has repeatedly broken rules, accessed pornography, including Judge Riley, you mentioned this access to this 2020 access to the pornography, which there was evidence that the court found with the bestiality, but also a more concern, I think, to the examiners, particularly Dr. Lovett, was his trying to access teen pornography. And he's had this longstanding issue with kind of hanging out with minors. He had, even after his 2008 offense, even when he was 19, he had a minor girlfriend that he wasn't supposed to have. He was, looking at minors in public, like to the extent that his treatment providers noted that as an issue. He was interacting with minors in the waiting room of treatment when he wasn't supposed to. Mr. Wynott or Mr. Snook in Mr. Brief, page 9 at the top, with this lack of adequate control, he lists the relevant factors from one of the Linehan decisions at the top of page 9. And really all five of those have applied to him since his last offense. The reason display of sexual impulsiveness would go as recently as 2020 probation violations. Concealing sexual misconduct, that was part of those violations. He concealed that he had an extra phone that he was using to access this stuff. So abusing substances, he has done that since his last offense. That is one of the things that he's made some progress on. He hasn't done it as recently, but that wasn't really tied to his offending. Aggressive behavior, he's repeatedly engaged in aggressive behavior over the years and since his last offense. And then the particular symptoms of mental disorder, which I already talked about. So really all five of those, he meets those as far as the lack of adequate control of sexual impulses. And then with respect to the high likelihood to reoffend sexually, the court found Dr. Alsdorf and Lovett's opinions on that element credible. And the court also considered all the numerous past assessments over the years that have found him. And again, particularly since 2008, there have been a number of assessors who have found him high risk and in need of inpatient sex offender treatment. And the trial court looked at the actuarial tools, you know, such as a static 99. And those tools themselves show that he is high risk to sexually reoffend. Judge Johnson brought up, the experts testified these are underestimates due not only to the short timeframes they look at, but kind of the definition of reoffending. They have to define that as either like an arrest or conviction. So they're not going to include anything that's not reported, for example. So those are, as Mr. Wynott noted, it's the experts will generally testify that those are something that underestimate risk. But that being said, to the extent they're used, they all show that Mr. Snook is highly likely to reoffend sexually. But that is only one part of a multi-factor analysis in these cases. And the court also looked at the dynamic risk factors. There were several dynamic risk factors that apply in this case, in Mr. Snook's case. And we described all of those in our brief. I'm not going to go through them here, but that is another factor. And the court looked at protective factors because that's the latest accepted methodology in these cases is you use the tools kind of to anchor that assessment, you know, to kind of start your assessment. Then you look at the dynamic factors, you look at the protective factors. And that is something that these experts did, and that is something the court considered. Most of the dynamic factors, if not all of them, support his high likelihood to reoffend, along with the actuarial tools, and they really were limited to no protective factors in Mr. Snook's case. Back when Dr. Linderman looked at him, I think it was 2011, when he wasn't, when a petition didn't go forward, you know, one of the protective factors he had was that he was under supervision till 2021. And I think that's one of the main things in her report, the main reason she didn't support at that time is, you know, the hope that kind of that external guidance would be something that could reduce his risk. And instead, he repeatedly engaged in high-risk behavior. He was repeatedly terminated from supervision. He was repeatedly terminated from sex offender treatment in the community. And he didn't get the reduction of risk that could have been associated with some kind of completion of treatment and control of his behavior in the community in that time period. And another thing that the doctors testified about that is present in this case is that combination of deviance and psychopathy that really increases an offender's risk kind of in addition to everything else. It's another factor that offenders tend to reoffend quicker and more seriously when they have that combination. one of the examiner in a case that I had, you know, testified that it's basically like not having that ability to kind of put on the brakes with respect to the deviance because of the psychopathy. And both of these experts found him to meet both psychopathy and then the paraphilia diagnoses are the deviance of those factors. And has, you know, he reoffended after the initial treatment exposure or completion, and he hasn't completed treatment again. He himself admits that he's compulsive. He doesn't think before he acts. He doesn't understand his triggers and issues that contribute to his offending, and he has repeatedly refused to address those issues as far as the kinds of things that would be protective because he could learn to control those things. And then I just want, you know, just as far as the timing goes of the behavior, I just really want to emphasize, and this is something that's in the record if the court wants to go to this 2020 behavior, but if you look at that, he testified, and this is in the record, and he testified it too, that prior to his last offense, he was searching for sexual information related to teens on the internet. He viewed erotic materials, including pornographic videos, 4 times a week, including 15 pornographic movies and accessing 19 internet porn sites. And then also, I think before that offense, had engaged in some public masturbation, including at teen hangouts. So now you have all these years later, after all this attempted intervention, after all this attempt at trying to help him control his behavior, in 2020, he used a cell phone. He had a cell phone that nobody knew he had so that he could access this stuff. And he's accessing all these sexually explicit materials and websites, and he's trying to connect with people for sexual purposes. He had over 1,600 emails and texts related to sites. And those things, that's all very high risk behavior for somebody with Mr. Snook's history. And all of those things support the court's finding that he's highly likely to reoffend sexually. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin, any questions? Seeing none, Mr. Wynott, do you have any rebuttal?
Only that Mr. Snook believes he has the ability to successfully complete treatment. He would like to be given the opportunity to do so in a less restrictive environment. He has family support in Arkansas and would like to be able to move there if possible.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments. They've been helpful and your briefing was helpful, and we will have our decision out within the 90 days.
Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.